Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Professional welder Shayna Ford used VR training developed by ForgeFX to hone her skills as a welder.
The more time that you spend practicing it, that's what separates a good welder from a great welder.
VR training can help students like Shayna repeatedly practice specific skills.
Virtual reality definitely helps because the more muscle memory that you have, the smoother your weld is.
Explore more stories like Shayna's at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Just
stay in. Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex, he's home from Athens. All right, give me a bark count. How many times did you bark?
I barked a few times. I barked 5 to 6 times. I understand what you were telling me last week, that it comes from the chest.
I told you.
It's not a woof woof. It's more of a hoo hoo. You know, a little bit more of that. You know, we worked on that. But I had a wonderful time. Got to meet a lot of listeners, some of them who came to our event with Home Field Apparel on Friday night, where we had a lovely time talking football, talking about the Dogs. We actually think we have the audio of that. And there's some pretty good insight there, I think, into Georgia football from some of the panelists that I was with. So we think we might release that to our subscribers on Substack later in the week.
Where, Alex? Sorry, where?
On Substack, where we have migrated. We appreciate you all very much, our subscribers, for, you know, bearing with a tech migration in the middle of the season. It's no fun at all, but it's been going great. People have been very receptive and I think really enjoying the features, the way that it's worked over there so far. If you were a subscriber on Patreon at the end of last month, you are still a subscriber on Substack. You're just getting the episodes to your inbox via a different platform. Make sure you download the Substack app. Make it a lot easier for you to consume the stuff that we do, which is not just podcasts now, but is also written stuff, including a newsletter that's coming out this week on college football. And we would love for you to continue your support there. It is, as always, the best way to support the show. If you go to the Split Zone Duo Substack, splitzoneduo.substack.com, again, you've already been comped. You've already essentially paid for the month of November because you were a subscriber at the start of the month. But you have to go and actually enter your information again to stay subscribed beyond the month because we did not take all of that with us. So,
and if you're not a subscriber, there's no time like the present. I mean, come on. Alex, I am glad that you were in Athens. I'm glad you had a good time in Athens. Are you a convert? Do you get it now? You get what we're angling for. I've taken you to LSU, so you've seen it the way it's supposed to be done.
Yeah, I loved it. I had a great time. I think it's a wonderful college town. I ate really well. Mama's Boy, world famous, couple of Athens joints that I went to. I was shown around by Josh Johns from Home Field, who is sort of like the mayor of Athens and is just an awesome person to get to see the place with. So it was a wonderful college town. Everyone was really welcoming. I totally get it. Loved meeting a lot of listeners, both at the event and like everywhere. Met someone in the bathroom at Sanford Stadium. Met a couple people at the airport today. Like, it was great. You know, it was awesome to meet people who share interests with me. And I do think that because of the way that I cover the sport, which is to say most of the time from home, I've been covering this thing with you for a long time and just have not been a lot of places. Mm. And it's just awesome to get out and do it and have a day. Go out and drink at 10 a.m. and, you know, be sipping on Gatorade by 6 so that you don't feel too bad the next morning. But like to just go out and have a college football day, not that you by any means need to be drinking to do that. But it was just a wonderful time out with the Dogs. And I don't know. I hope I had a better time than you did yesterday, but you were at home. So maybe you're OK, despite the result in Gainesville.
Always good to have home cooking. Yeah, beers at college games, one of the great innovations in our society that capitalism has wrought. I'm glad we at least have that. Shout out to our subscriber, Mark, who hooked up the tickets and always hooks up the tickets very often when I'm in town and able to get to Gator games. And also shout out to the subscriber whose name escapes me, who I met outside of the O'Connell Center. It's the O'Connell Center. I don't give a shit what the name is right now. Shout out to you. And it was really good saying, hey, it's always really good to see our subscribers out in the wild.
It is. So thank you for putting up with this late episode because we were both out having fun yesterday and we needed time to watch the games today. And thank you for putting us with us.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking
time
about
to watch the games.
I mean, that is about 60% of it. I guess there is also a sleeping it off element of it as well. But now you've also sat through us talking about how much fun we had this weekend. Richard, 30 minutes on the clock. Do the hurry up. Oh, and of course, thank you again to Homefield, SCD20 for 20% off your first order.
I'd love to put 30 minutes on the clock. I'll do that in 3, 2, 1, Alabama 42, LSU 28. Dude, LSU was going to score 30 points, and then Jaden Daniels had a concussion. But
I think that your take on that is it didn't work out, but it was vindicated in terms of the way that it was.
Right. Yes exactly. Yes. Look, it was honestly a hell of a game in not the way I thought it was going to be a hell of a game, right? Like, it's interesting because Jalen Milroe, like, we got the full Milroe, right? We really got it in this game. I think we got both the passing and the running for the first time. When that guy has the ball in his hands, I don't know if I'm ready to say like Lamar electric with the ball in his hands, but he is absolutely box office with the ball in his hands. It's wild.
Dude, he's like, if I were to compare his running style, he's somewhere between Lamar electricity and like Jalen Hurts between the tackles physicality in terms of quarterback run game. Like, he moves and is a power runner at the same time.
When he stuck his foot in the ground on that touchdown run, he stuck his foot in the ground and the fluidity and the, and you're like, that's serious. That's a very, very serious athlete.
He's going to get Heisman votes, just so you know. Like, the way this season has gone, that's going to happen. I'm just telling you, it is possible that you will see him in New York in a month, which is really something for the way that this season started. I think Alabama is great. I am now resigned to it that they are not going to lose a second game, and it is going to be Alabama and Georgia and Atlanta, and Alabama is going to be winning in.
SEC championship game defense good, I guess. Yeah?
That's possibly, what we move possibly to? Sugar Bowl. At least Peach Bowl.
No. Sugar Bowl. Well, I mean, Sugar Bowl's a playoff game, so yes, yeah. Maybe possibly. But yeah. Yes. I don't know where else they go. But Year's 6 game defense good?
This is a good football team. And they are a threat, and they have to be considered as such. LSU, it's a huge bummer. Jaden Daniels gets hurt, and when your best player gets hurt, your best player gets hurt.
Because he was batshit until he got hurt.
Yes, he was incredible in that game. I did think it should have been targeting in addition to the 15, by the way, on the Dallas Turner hit. But aside from that, and I don't, it's hard to decouple them because, again, it's your best player, and he's getting hurt. It's a waste of a year for them and a waste of a great quarterback. And 3 losses at the first weekend in November is not what they were looking for. I think they got a bit of a Matt House problem defensively. I don't know exactly what the best way is to deploy Harold Perkins, but whatever it was not what we saw last night. Can't be.
Yes, it can.
I don't know, man.
Because if he's not going to stop the run, you can't stick him on the edge for 70 snaps.
What about quarterback spy all night? What about spy all night? They didn't do that. They did on one notable play, and unfortunately ended in a horse collar. But to me, the bummer wasn't that he didn't have sacks. It was that Milroe ran for 1 billion yards and 4 touchdowns when you have maybe the best suited linebacker in the country to go and get him.
They've kicked him out. They've kicked him out in the slot a little bit too. So you sort of see him now. I think he's a boy without a home. I think they're still trying to figure out what the best use of him is down in, down out. And you're right. They have not been able to figure that out. That is something that they are going to have to figure out on defense. They got other issues though. They weren't good enough up front. You know, they're bad on the back end. They're bad in the secondary.
Their cornerbacks.
Like, it's not just a him issue. Yeah. It's not just a him issue.
No. It's not. And it's not just a coordinator issue either. It's also a Brian Kelly issue and a who's on your team issue. Almost 38, Texas A&M 35. This was more exciting than I thought it would be, and more exciting than I thought it was while I was sort of in real time checking on it, because this game was in the afternoon when I was in the run-up to going to this game in Athens. Can I say something actually kind of nice about A&M before we go off here? They've done a pretty good job with the backup quarterback. Like, the Ole Miss defense is not bad, and they scored.
Yeah. I think I said this during the week. Like, it's a backup quarterback. I mean,
and no Evan Stewart here. No Evan Stewart. And they still put up into the mid-30s against, I know it's an Ole Miss defense, but it is a fine defense. Like, this is
not. It's not your older brother's Ole Miss defense. It's not your best friend's who graduated 2 years ago's Ole Miss defense.
No. So there is that. And I think there's a lot to be said for scoring that many points with a backup and without best or second best player, Evan Stewart. But also, you are what your record is. I think this is 9 losses in a row in the SEC on the road for them, which is preposterous. I do take personal pleasure in DJ Durkin being the guy who fucked it up. You know, but at least he represents you very well, Jimbo. At least he's a good guy to have, you know, leading young men. It was an impressive performance that falls short. And I guess that is better than a lot of what they've had. But on the Ole Miss side, still in the race.
Yeah.
Pending Athens a week from now. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big game.
You know, what they got coming down the tracks, as they say in Athens, as I'm sure you heard them say in Athens.
I did hear that. Yeah.
In Athens. It gets pretty serious pretty quick here. And we're going to find out because, as you saw for your own two eyes, Georgia 30, Mizzou 21. Mizzou brought its best. This is the second year in a row they have given Georgia absolute hell, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
They really have. Some of this has to do with Georgia. Georgia's just not as good as they were the last 2 years. They are approximately the best team in the country. They are not as good as they were the last 2 years. They are going to be in a spot like this, a touch gettable. They were tied at halftime, but cream rose to the top at the end. The SEC championship game is going. I don't know about toss up in the SEC. We'll get to December when we get there, but like, I think you, this is what they are at this point in time. If they get Brock Bowers back, you know, different proposition on offense. But dude, Carson Beck is not a detriment to winning, in my opinion. Like, Carson Beck is an additive, in my opinion, here.
I'm not dumb enough to say that, like, any team doesn't need Brock Bowers back, but this new guy, Oscar Delp, who plays tight end for them, is really good, too. I did think that Mizzou had a really good plan in this game that will probably be copycatted. Not that there are very many teams that can beat Georgia. And there's, you know, they're only going to see one in the SEC championship game really that I think could, but I think they understood, Drinkwitz and staff did, that the strength of Georgia's defense is sort of in the middle. It's the teeth of that defense. It's including all the way back to the safeties. And so
but that strength is not as strong as it was the last 2 years.
But even so, Mizzou's answer to that was a million stretch runs and like a million back shoulder throws to Theo Weiss and some deep balls to Luther Burden. And it kind of worked. I mean, they only scored 21 points, but it was a pretty good plan that they had in this game.
Well, here's the thing. When you run stretch, like, there's a way to just absolutely, you know, if you have Jalen Carter, like, there's a way to just absolutely massacre a stretch play, which is to get inside push, inside penetration, and then the flow is completely screwed up. You can even kind of backdoor the play if you've got a Jalen Carter or what. Like, so, but Mizzou was able to execute, and that's like, when that offense is right, like, what's right, it's right at app, like, that, it's the stretch, play action off of it, go over the top, you have great receivers, have a ball. But yeah, I mean, Mizzou acquitted themselves quite nicely in this game. I really thought they were going to get smoked by 20 points.
The truth of it is that there was only one maybe minute or two in the game where it really looked like Georgia might lose. And that ended when Azeer Stackhouse, who's not Jalen Carter, but is a good player on the interior defensive line, had a ball thrown into his stomach by Brady Cook and caught it and rumbled the other way. The run back didn't count because of a crackback block Clipping. That brought it back. But it was cool and it fired up the place. And then they kick a field goal and they go up 9. A lot of fun. Thank you again, Athens. I love being with you. Can't wait to do it again sometime. Richard, Florida gives Arkansas its first SEC win.
Woof.
I heard the ending was pretty bad too.
Yeah, missed an extra point, which was sort of the difference there. Trevor Etienne, box office. I owe a lot of happiness in my life to Mr. and Mrs. Etienne. But Florida, like, at the very end, basically, Florida takes a 12 men on the field penalty because they were like, instead of, they had like 18 or 20 seconds left and could have just sort of gone up and spiked it, but they run the kick team off and then they run the kick team off and it's a mess. And then, he misses the field goal to win at the very end. Then they go into overtime and Arkansas scores in the bottom of the first overtime and they win. I will say this about it, dude. KJ Jefferson in person is wow. to be honest.
Is he tall? Is he big?
Yeah. Seeing KJ Jefferson in person, it's one of those where you're like, how do you get that guy on the ground ever, pretty much?
That was a question that I think flummoxed Nick Saban when he was trying to verbalize how you get him on the ground after that play that he made against Alabama a couple weeks ago. But yeah, good for Arkansas. Good for Sam Pittman to get a win here, and not great for Billy or Florida. South Carolina, 38. Jacksonville State, 28. Gamecocks over Gamecocks. Happy for the Gamecocks. Avoided some trouble against the Gamecocks.
South Carolina need to pick six to win this game. So that's where we're at there. In the Big 12, Texas 33, K-State 30, also in overtime. Look, I want to say this about the overtime thing. You guys have got to get over this like thing about everybody's obsessed with playing more snaps in overtime. Why do you want to play more snaps in overtime? You're on the 4-yard line. Try to win the game. You have a chance to win the game. Go win the game. And by the way, K-State would have probably won the game on second down if Texas didn't happen to have two NFL defensive linemen up front. Because I believe it was Murphy, like literally just like ragdolls, Byron Murphy ragdolls a guard while Will Howard is stepping up to try to lollipop a ball over to a receiver who was coming open in the back of the end zone. He's not able to do it. The ball gets tipped. The third down play got blown up. I think it was a deflection. And then the fourth down play. The fourth down play, Byron Murphy turns the center into like a blocking sled, and Will Howard is, you know, Will Howard can't do anything really. And the play blows up and they win the game. But Texas beat them up front all day, pretty much, in my opinion, and was the better team. This was the win. We talked about this in the midweek. You don't have your quarterback. You have to find a way to get in and get out of this with a win. And they did. And it wasn't awesome. It wasn't sexy. And K-State stormed back and all that. But you won at the end of the day without your best player. Yes, they are going to need Quinn Ewers back if we're going to be actually serious about Texas. But for now,
yeah,
you won.
Yeah. Malik Murphy's a fine backup. He is not it. Like, he's not Quinn. And they clearly do not think that RG is either. And I'm sure he's not if they don't think that. I want to compliment Kansas State in this way, not just because there was a comeback, which was very surprising to kind of monitor from afar as you realize what had happened there. This is a Big 12 championship defending team, not anymore effectively, but they are the Big 12 defending champs. And so I want to almost compliment them by saying they kind of let it get away too, against a really good Texas team that they probably maybe beat here, if not for special teams shenanigans. Short field goal, PAT, a snap issue, a missed kick. That was 4 points that were left on the board right there, and they lose by three. Obviously, a game can play out differently. But if you're Kansas State, you expect to compete in these games, and I have no doubt that you're kicking yourselves today because of the way that this one got away. Texas has the inside track now on the Big 12 championship game because of this, Richard.
This win is for all the Cowboys that have gone before us. For Terry Miller and Pat Jones and Jimmy Johnson and Bob Stanley and Barry Sanders and Leslie O'Neill, Thurman Thomas. They were soldiers in an unwinnable football war because Oklahoma State was not committed to the sport. Thanks to our fans, thanks to great decision making, we are darn well committed to the sport, and the Cowboys have taken a cowboy boot and given the Sooners a swift kick in the backside to send them away to their new home.
That's Dave Hunziker on the Oklahoma State Sports Network from Learfield. You can check out the College Football Blitz every Saturday from noon Eastern time to midnight, free on the Varsity app. It's the Red Zone channel for college football, and it's free on the Varsity app. That's available on Apple and Android devices. And Oklahoma State fans, you are probably going to, I don't know, want to go back and listen to that call by Dave Hunziker a lot of times, because it was an appropriate way to send off Bedlam, I'm going to guess not forever, but for the foreseeable future. It was appropriate because, frankly, Oklahoma State deserves some happiness in this rivalry and gets to go out on a 2-game winning streak, which is obviously historically anomalous. But we said it in the midweek, like, anything can happen in Bedlam. Oklahoma State can lose by a little or by a medium amount, or they can lose by a lot. But actually this year,
they
could actually win this game this year. And they do, 27-24.
Anything happened in this game. Look, OU's good. OU is good, but Oklahoma is not going to win a game in January. All right. I said in the midweek, Texas is a better team. They did not win the game on the day a couple weeks ago in Red River, but Texas is a better team than them. Now, Oklahoma, by the way, probably isn't going to the Big 12 championship game, which, yes, too long. But I mean that because Oklahoma State is probably going to the Big 12 championship game. Oklahoma State has the three newcomers.
And they got a Kansas problem too. The Oklahoma does because of that loss. And Kansas. Yes. So like, yeah, Oklahoma is presumably not going to play in the Big 12 championship game. Would need chaos. Yes.
And Oklahoma State gets newcomers on the way home here. Take care of business and you're fine. And by the way, those Big 12 newcomers, the Big 12 suck. Newcomers wins off the top of my head, a Hail Mary against Houston. Or a Hail Mary against West Virginia, sorry, for Houston. And then BYU, I think, beat Texas Tech. But other than that, they've only beat themselves.
All against it's each tough. Other. That's correct. It has been an endorsement for how much different the level of play is from the Power 5 to even the best group of five conference because of the way that you can recruit. Mike Gundy called a shot after that abominable South Alabama blowout that they took back in week 3 or 4. And he said at his press conference a couple days later, and we talked about it on the show, hey, guys, like I looked at the tape, and this was a 20-something, 30-point loss to South Alabama, and I wasn't as worried as I was in the moment. Like, I don't think we have major problems. I really don't. And I think what I said was, okay, we'll see. But, like, that was a condescending we'll see. Like, I thought it was full of shit.
You guys, you took a question on the subscriber show that was like, should we fire this guy? And I was like, no, it's probably going to be fine. Like,
but anyway, the point is, this guy, I thought it was good. They were playing three quarterbacks. Their fans were despondent. We're looking
for the podcaster who buried Mike Gundy. We haven't found him yet.
I don't know if it was a burial, but I do want to say that I am shocked by this turnaround. They are really good, and they weren't.
Kansas 28.
He called a
shot.
Kansas
28.
No, no, don't let Oklahoma's coaching staff get out of there that easily either. Venables and Lebby did not cover themselves in glory here. Lebby, obviously, 24 points to 24 points. Venables' timeout management was very weird in this game. They spent one to kick a field goal, and then they didn't spend one when they were kind of disheveled running up to the line and the clock was ticking on the last drive at the very end of the game. Not great. Not a game management masterclass, but obviously it was by Oklahoma State.
Kansas 28, Iowa State 21. Kansas is good. Ain't no two ways about it. That's a good football team.
Jason Bean still doing it. Lawrence Arnold connecting with him for many a yard. I think it was large bills only, like three catches for 100 and a lot in this game and a touchdown. That's what it'll do. It's what it'll work. West Virginia 37, BYU 7. We mentioned the problems that the Big 12 newcomers are having this year. Like, Neil Brown is, I mean, they're bowl eligible again. And I think if he doesn't lose, like, all three in a row to end this game, to end this year, it's going to be pretty hard for him to meet the fate that everyone thought he was going to meet at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. And again, it's the newbies in this league. Woof. Woof, 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 woof. All right. Quick ones before we get out of here. Texas Tech 35, TCU 28. TCU 7-5. Hate it because it's
maybe
going to make last year look like the biggest and like, you know what I mean, right?
They might go 7-5. That was what I thought like their downgrade was going to be to 7-5. They have five losses now. They have to win out. Like, I hope that these teams both make bowls because I think that the sport is a little bit richer if these teams are doing well. But yeah, it's a tough year. Step back for everybody, but a nice win here for Texas Tech.
Pac-12, Washington USC went exactly how you think it went. Exactly how you think it went. By the way, as of Sunday afternoon, Alex Grinch is out of a job.
Why?
They fired him.
Sorry, that's not
probably
nice.
Because they're playing so a nice shooting guard at linebacker and asking that guy to run to fit the run. Right. You know, and number he did 10. Not fit the run.
10? Talking about 10.
Yes.
We noticed the same thing. Okay, yeah.
He did not fit the run to the tune of, I believe, 250 bills from Washington's running back in this game and four tutties, one of them being, I think, a 50-yard run. I mean, it's for all of Michael Penix's brilliance. And Michael Penix had one of the better touchdown passes you will ever see in this game because, you know, he's Michael Penix and he has these receivers. But it's the running attack, the rushing attack that won the day.
I do think that while Alex Grinch obviously needed to be fired and before now, they also have a dudes problem. Their recruiting on defense is not the same as their recruiting on offense. I asked someone about this who just like has been around USC a lot, who was watching the game last night. And it was pointed out to me that, like, if you see, for instance, like, let's say it's pregame and you see young men walking around in street clothes, it's not always clear who are the recruits and who are the players in terms of size, physically sized with the USC defense. They have issues that Alex Grinch was not solely responsible, though ultimately he's pretty responsible for it. Oregon State 26.
Oh, by the way, real quick, before Oregon State, Washington State's defense is not playoff series. All right. We don't have to.
Washington's defense.
That, yeah. 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 Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. I would agree. Washington State's also isn't, though.
Fair.
Yeah. Fair. Oregon State 26, Colorado 19. Richard, Deion Sanders says that he has tinted windows and we can't even see inside his house. That's correct. But we can see that you bet Sean Lewis, who's a pretty highly regarded play caller and offensive coach. And then after you do that, in your first game, you go through three quarters where you have 2 yards per play, 2.0 yards per play through three quarters. And then they score a bit in garbage time. They get up to a whopping 4 yards per play for the game. Doesn't look great, Deion. Doesn't look great.
This was a tough one, I think, for them to take. Shador Sanders obviously hurt. Deion said he went and got a visit from Dr. Toradol in the second half at some point in time. He was clearly limping around, probably some residual from last week, getting battered by UCLA. You have an offensive line that isn't good. You can't do a lot of stuff. You get scouted as the course of the season goes on. Attrition happens, yada, 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 and it starts to catch up with you. Deion Sanders. The interesting thing is he owned like the end of first half, whatever the hell we call that at the end of the first half, when they kind of just spotted Oregon State a touchdown and they went in the game at 14-3 instead of 7-3. Deion did own that going into halftime. But yeah, the Lewis, Deion doesn't want to call it a demotion, but you strip play calling from the guy and now he's just coaching quarterbacks. It's a demotion, whatever. And you gave it back to Pat Shurmur, play calling to Pat Shurmur, elevating him from analyst to offensive coordinator. So it's something's amiss there. Something's going on there. And yes, Deion, I understand the house has tinted windows, but that's kind of the problem here. The kind of the problem that you can't tell what's happening here. What's going on?
Because it doesn't seem good. It's not like, oh, they're brewing something up. Pat Shurmur's got all the answers. I mean, clearly he's a good football coach. I mean, he's been an NFL head coach, but Sean Lewis is not their issue. Like, Sean Lewis has stitched together a pretty good offense with a solid quarterback, a couple skill guys, and no line whatsoever. That doesn't really add up to demotion to me. If Deion has a great reason for it, it'd probably be good to explain that. Because otherwise it just looks dumb. Looks dumb. Arizona 27, UCLA 10. Zona's going to be ranked this week when the committee gets frisky. Together.
Told you they're frisky.
More than frisky. They're just good.
Frisky business. Well.
No, I mean, they're not like New Year's Bowl good, but they're good. Like, this is a good upper tier Power 5 team this year. The defense was like one of the worst in the country last year, and that really mitigated a lot of their offensive success. I think that this year the defense is still not great, but it had a really big breakthrough here, even against, you know, Ethan Garber's UCLA that doesn't do a ton offensively. And they're fine. They're a lot better than they were. I think if you're a Colorado fan who's looking for some reason for optimism for 2024 right now, I think I'd look at Arizona. I felt that the comparison between those two teams made a lot of sense before the season, where you would see some strides forward just because of a talent infusion that's been there. Obviously, different scales. But it's not going to really come together until you build depth and you play a little bit of defense. I think maybe 2024 Colorado could be like 2023 Arizona. We'll see. Also, Stanford, 10-7 over Wazoo. Wazoo has lost the plot, which is sad in their final year in the Pac-12.
To the ACC, Clemson 31, Notre Dame 23. Apparently, Dabo Swinney has investment advice because he says buy stock in Clemson now, apparently. So look, your note is well taken. Clemson was not just, you know, your normal 4-4 opponent. I think that's something to keep in mind. But Notre Dame, who I think has been playing really, really good football the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Not here.
No, not here. At some point after this season, I want to sit down and do like while we're on the stock metaphor, sort of track the price movement in everyone from that carousel of late 2021. Like, who's happy right now between the LSU people who got Brian Kelly? Are the Notre Dame people really thrilled about anything Marcus Freeman's done? I mean, I know the messages that they're sending out about their recruiting. I mean, Notre Dame needs the playoff to triple in size rapidly, and it is. It's going to. So very good for them. Louisville 34, Virginia Tech 3. Did you get a look at this one, Richard?
I did not, but I besides the score and all right, Virginia Tech, what happened here, hon? Because I'd been impressed the last few weeks, and didn't Virginia Tech have a long week, or am I making that up? Didn't they play Thursday last week? I don't know.
I think they did, actually. I think you're right about that. What happens for Virginia Tech is that progress is not linear. And there was a very neat kind of line of demarcation, which was Grant Wells out, Kyren Drones in, defense improves under Brent Pry, which you knew it would, and Virginia Tech puts a season together and things get a lot less sad in Blacksburg. Progress is not linear. Louisville comprehensively destroyed them in this game. I think Louisville's a compelling team. I don't know if they can beat Florida State. I mean, I don't expect them to, but like I'm trying to think, like, could it come together? And I think the answer is maybe, specifically because of their defense. The Jeff Brohm, anytime you're coached by Jeff Brohm, your offense is going to be what gets the most attention because he is a highly regarded offensive mind, and that is what he does. That's his side of the ball. And their most talked about transfer is going to be Jack Plummer because that's the way that it works. I think one of the really important transfers that they got who has not gotten as much to pub, including on this podcast, is Storm Duck, the cornerback who had been at North Carolina for a very long time.
Yeah, good player.
And who North Carolina seems to miss. I don't know all the circumstances of that transfer. One never does when a player goes from one school to another, especially in the same conference. But he was good in this game. They being Louisville, are still a factor. They are still alive. I do not expect them to beat Florida State and make the playoff, but it's about to be mid-November, and Louisville is in the playoff race. Year one under Brohm, fantastic for them. NC State 20, Miami 6. I hope you didn't get to watch too much of this one if you're a Miami fan with an interest in quarterback play.
NC State defies belief, I would say that. Like, no offense, just vibes.
Tyler Van Dyke's highlights in this game, and I want to assure you that that was all I needed to see, and I would not recommend that anyone probe any deeper, were gory. Gory. Like,
that NC State interceptions. Defense, that NC State defense is built for that, though, right? If you like, they, you know, they're bringing it from different angles, and they're standing up, and they're amoebing, and they're all they're going to make you think post snap. They're going to make you process post snap. And
very fair. Florida State 24, Pitt 7. You get it. I mean, the Pitt we were in
danger. No, yeah. Don't do that. We were in danger here of a Narduzzi-ing. There was a chance of an isolated Narduzzi-ing, and then it did pass over. Yes.
Okay. Fine. Iowa 10, Northwestern 7. Beth Getz, the winner here, the winner of all winners. Beth Getz, the Iowa interim athletic director, gets to, I am sure that she shook so many hands in Chicago this weekend. Like, that luxury suite of hers must have been like the absolute place to be. Like, Sinatra in the booth at the Copacabana was her greeting Iowa fans, saying, thank you, Beth, for ending this nightmare. And then they go out and they score no points in the first half against Northwestern to totally vindicate her. And then they win anyway. Perfect weekend for her.
Of course they did.
But no notes for Beth. Perfectly executed, tremendous athletic directorship by her this weekend. It's as good as you can possibly do it. Can't be done better.
Indiana 20, Wisconsin 14. Look, I think the Wisconsin thing is like pretty easy. Braylon Allen's hurt and the quarterback's not very good. That's about what I got. That's about all I got.
This is great for Indiana. It gets them on the board in the Big Ten. I don't think it should change anyone's view of like the trajectory of that thing under Tom Allen, but I also don't think it needed to. I think that my understanding from the smart Indiana people in my life is that they're probably not going to pay that buyout and they're just going to run this thing back anyway. So you're not really shooting yourself in the foot because you're going to bring it back anyway. So it's an unqualified great victory for them against a team that is always an accomplishment to beat, even when they're not very good, which is the case right now.
Penn State, dude, what's going on in College Park here, boss? Because this is
okay.
Penn State 51, okay. Maryland 15 is not how I thought that was going
to
go.
I think that people underestimate the extent to which Maryland's season has gone to hell in a handbasket here. They are just a mess of the maximum proportion. They are terrible. Like, they are non-competitive in every way that you can be non-competitive. I think that I agree with the point that I saw Bill DeFilippo made on Twitter that he writes for UpRocks and is a good internet pal. Penn State does not respect Maryland at all. Maryland has beaten that team a couple times. Like, once was a sanctions year under Edsel 2014. Once was the COVID year. And Maryland has gloated about that both times a lot because they have to, because Penn State recruits an area that Maryland would like to recruit better. So James Franklin hates Maryland. Doesn't respect, but doesn't like Maryland.
Didn't he coach at Maryland for a little bit too?
Oh, yeah, with Locksley. Yeah, and I don't know the ins and outs of their relationship, but I don't think that James Franklin is the world's number one Mike Locksley respecter. And when you win 51-15, you don't have to be. Maryland is the get-right game for Penn State's offense. I don't know what it means because Maryland's so bad, but Drew Aller had his best game as a college student, and it's a good time to be tuning up because their season continues in more earnest next week. Ohio State 35, Rutgers 16. Ohio State had a fake punt that wasn't, Ryan Day said. It was a weird game.
Dude, this is losing. Like the fourth time this has happened, by the way, in the last couple years. Ohio State's had a weird punt. I don't know. I don't get it.
No, they happened against Rutgers like a year ago, too, and the punter got destroyed. I remember that.
It's weird. Yeah. Okay, look, Ohio State was not ever losing to Rutgers. We understand. We're all adults here. But, like, I think you kind of understand what it is with Ohio State at this point in time. They needed Trayvon Henderson back badly to give them an explosive play threat that isn't Marvin Harrison Jr. Kyle McCord is limited. Their defense is good. They are not going to have the best quarterback on the field when they play Michigan in a couple weeks here. I think it may end up coming to haunt them in that game. We will get there when we get there. What is immediate, though, is Michigan absolutely crushing Purdue by whatever the hell the score was. Who cares? Michigan plays Penn State on Saturday. Finally, preseason is over for Michigan.
Who's going to coach that game for Michigan?
I don't know, boy. I don't know, buddy. I do not know, because as somebody who has spoken to someone who is very familiar with the Big Ten call, AD call on Thursday evening, there is a movement to suspend Jim Harbaugh. Seriously, imminently, before next weekend.
This could get fun, because Michigan is clearly ready to go to the mat for this guy. They have their president, Santa Ono, writes a letter about due process. It leaks. Obviously, that's Michigan giving it to any reporter who would like it. Right. It leaks. It's like you hit a crowbar to the pipe and the water comes out. Michigan is playing an information game here, as are all of the other Big Ten schools. I don't know. I'm excited to see how this goes. Tony Petitti makes enough money that I don't feel bad for him that this is his problem. And let's see what he does. Gonna be interesting.
Army 23, Air Force 3. Holy cow.
All right. Air Force, this is the most shocking result.
Air Force just gave, I mean, look, the Service Academy game. So yes, stuff can happen in Service Academy games. But I mean, Air Force just gave Army the ball again and again and again and again. Army hits a big play.
And again and again and again. You said three. It was six, three, six against. Yes. Five against, I guess, plus the first one.
Army hits a big touchdown at the beginning of the game. Then they get the ball in the 30 because of a fumble. Then they got the ball in the 30 because of a fumble. And they just kept on sort of stacking field goals because they just kept being on the short side of the field. And Air Force could not do anything. Army goes up, I believe it was 20-0 in the first quarter. And the under cashed in this game because Service Academy under.
Service Academy ball. We love it. James Madison 42, Georgia State 14. James Madison would have the inside track now on the New Year's Six spot for the G5, if not for, you know, we've covered it well on this podcast, as has just about everybody following the story. For Georgia State, you'd like to see more. I'm not going to come down on them at all for getting beaten up by the best team in the Sun Belt. I think we understand where Georgia State is right now, right? Like, they're a lot better than certain podcasters. Again, we don't know who they are. I thought they would be. Troy drubbed them.
I don't know who they are.
James Madison has drubbed them. They're not at the top of the Sun Belt yet. Move on. Everyone can move on.
Jordan McLeod, good. Tough for USF. Tough. Troy 28, South Alabama 10. Troy getting it right here. We deserve a rematch.
Been weeks of it.
We deserve a rematch. We're not getting it. It's tough.
Yeah. James Madison won in Troy at the beginning of this year. There were some James Madison staffers who were taunting the fans. It was a nice little scene that was going on there. I mean, is there anything stopping the Sun Belt from just making this the championship game? And like, what are they going to do? Like, I understand you can't play in a bowl or whatever. I don't know. It's just, this is a little silly that we're not going to get to see that game. Like, are we going to have to send like Appalachian State out there to play that game?
I sure as hell hope not. Okay. Arkansas State 37, Louisiana 17. That is a massive win for Arkansas State. Massive win.
Feels dead like the kind of early win that could be the, yeah, yeah.
Dead and buried early, change the quarterback, have a pulse, then come rocketing back down to earth. And they beat a Louisiana team who is not terrible, is not even bad, I would say.
No, not bad at all. Feels like the kind of win that could be the difference between an opening and not an opening in carousel season. Like, it's a big, big win for Butch. Tulane 13, ECU 10. The lack of the James Madison postseason is also a bummer because I don't know who else is going to represent the group of five. Like, Tulane is not inspiring a great deal of confidence here. Maybe you don't worry too much because they were in ECU's territory all game. They ran 66% of their plays, I think it was, from across the 50. And the teams only had seven possessions each. And they just had like a missed short field goal. They had a turnover on downs. So they probably should have won this game by 10 or 13 points more. But you're going to need some more offense if you're Tulane when you play in a couple weeks against UTSA, 37, North Texas, 29.
Yeah, they could get them. They could get them. UTSA is when we're talking about rounding into form. UTSA is rounding into form, getting healthy, and looking like I think we thought they were going to look when they came into this league. And I thought they were going to clean up pretty early.
Have not lost a game in the American. All of their losses are from elsewhere. So keep an eye on them. And SMU and Memphis are both still also very much in this mix. SMU beats Rice closer than they wish, 36-31. Memphis gives up a 50 burger and still wins by two scores, 59-50.
Our Tigers, baby.
USF.
Our Tigers.
Dude, the offense is prolific. There's not a lot of defense. In general, there's not a lot of defense being played in the top of the American outside of Tulane. That's sort fine. Of a defense optional league
That's
right fine. Now.
That's kind of how I like it down there. Texas State 45, Georgia Southern 24, Bowl Texas State. I'm sure you've probably seen the video by now of G.J. Kinney and the school's president jumping into, I believe it's a river near campus or on campus, which I believe G.J. Kinney promised to do. So that was pretty cool. That was neat.
Yeah, the river jump into the San Marcos River is a graduation tradition at Texas State, but it is now also a bowl eligibility tradition. And it can be that because after 100% of Texas State's bowl eligibility clinchers in their history, they've done it. They've literally never made a bowl and not jumped into the river.
UNLV 56, New Mexico 14. Wow, from UNLV, by the way, turning it on and pretty serious on offense.
They're 7-2. They're in the Mountain West race. They're probably not going to get into that title game. They have a loss to Fresno. That's going to be very problematic for them probably in that pursuit, but what a turnaround. And Jaden Maiava is an awesome young group five quarterback. Probably should be getting some tampering with him. If you're smart, if you're any number of Power Five teams that are quarterback challenged, but I don't hope for that unless it makes some money, in which case, great. Ricky White, the receiver, buck 65, two touchdowns. UNLV, man, like what a time that we're living through. They're good. They're fun.
Fresno 37, Boise 30. All right, Boise, we understand what weight class you're in this league. You're out of one weight class, but you are not in the other weight class in this league, by the way.
Yeah, it's tough right now because in a vacuum, almost all of Boise's losses are like not necessarily an indictment on their own, but they just add up. And you're here, like there's not a lot of shame in losing by 7 to a pretty good Jeff Tedford team that might win this league again. They didn't have Ashton Jeanty. They do have another good running back, George Halani. But Fresno was a little too much. This was basically a 10-point game before like a very, very late Boise field goal. Malik Sherrod for Fresno, 95-yard kickoff return and 120 on the ground. Good work. That'll help.
Sam Houston off the schneid. They win 24-21 over Kennesaw. It is not an FBS team yet in Kennesaw, but yes, it's a win. A win is a win.
Yeah, wins are good. Well, it's a win as an FBS program. We'll go with that messaging for sure. Liberty has clinched the regular season top seed in Conference USA. They are cruising. Western Kentucky being mediocre, surprisingly mediocre, has kind of killed competition there. It's not going to take a year for Liberty to win this league. In all likelihood, they're the best team in this conference. Quiet week in the MAC back on Tuesday and Wednesday. The biggest story was the Connor Stallions thing with him maybe being on Central Michigan sideline. That's the story there. But Richard, I think maybe the saddest team in college football this weekend is actually an FCS checkup that I want to do before we get out of here. North Dakota State loses the Dakota Marker 33-16 to South Dakota State. This game was in Billings, not Fargo. NDSU, if you didn't notice, is 6-3. Not a guaranteed playoff team, though they still absolutely could make the tournament. They have clearly fallen behind their rival. It's about to be an embarrassing 3 years out of four without a national title.
Which for them is like an international incident, by the way.
Yeah, like I'm half kidding, but only half. So interested in that. And in that whole situation, getting to the bottom of it, what might be happening in North Dakota State?
Are you saying that you're saying the dynasty's over? They got to find you.
I just said I'm getting to the bottom of it. I did not say anything.
Okay. All right.